The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning. Today is Monday, the 15th of January. Joining us this morning is the bank dude, Mr. Dalby.
And as always, I am absolutely, it's easy for you to say that, right?
Yeah, I was
delighted to see you, Brian.
I was just thinking you were getting choked up. Just even
I am
trying to say anything about it.
Yeah. Anytime I'm around you, it just happens, right?
So it's like your airwaves are contracting and constricting, so there may be an allergic reaction.
That's exactly what it is. My eyes water whenever I'm around you.
Yeah, well, that goes both ways, bud. You ready for our question here? We're still in sports and leisure, by the way.
All right. Well, I'm terrible at that, so...
Okay. Why, when someone has won without any question, do we say that he did it, or she did it, hands down?
Oh, I have no idea.
Well, you're probably...
Hands down.
Yeah.
No idea. Is it a horse racing thing?
Yeah.
It is.
How'd you pull that one out of thin air?
Well, you measure a horse by how many hands.
Right.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Okay. To win hands down has nothing to do with placing a winning hand of cards face down. Instead, the expression comes from the earliest days of horse racing. If a horse had proven its superiority and was approaching the finish line well ahead of the pack, the jockey would release the reins, giving the horse free rein to the finish. He therefore would win the race...
Hands down.
Hands down. I'm impressed that you got that close.
Yeah.
I guess hanging out at the horse race track over the years is paying off for you.
Yep, that is something I have never done.
Gone to a horse race track?
Yeah.
I've been, obviously, Ferndale. I mean, I think, you know, everybody's kind of wandered through that one every once in a while.
I haven't.
No, really? Just
I haven't
to see
even
people?
Done that, no.
Oh, I like people watching. The only time there was a fella who, when I was... playing ball at Humboldt, was the sports information director. And Mike had been a sports guy at Channel 3 after he'd worked for us here and relocated to Portland. And we were up there doing, I think it was the what Neil Lomax played for, it wasn't Portland State. And OB was there as the TV guy, and he said, "We're going for a ride." I said, "Okay." Went out to Portland Downs. He tried to explain to me horse race handicapping. There was no chance. It was just by the name, by the way the horse looks, the pretty color. You know, he realized that it was not in the cards for me. So,
so you didn't make a lot of money that day?
I didn't bet a lot. It was like $5 or something like that, and the horse finished like fifth or something. Well, okay, wrong colors. But it's kind of like, I think for a lot of us in various settings, it's the experience. You know, I'd love to go to the Indianapolis 500 one time. Underline one time.
Mm-hmm.
Experience it. Churchill Downs would be fun. One time. Daytona 500. Just to experience. I've been to the horse race tracks and the car race tracks, but not when they were happening. I suspect that either that means I have a very shallow perspective on life or I'm easily entertained. You know, but I think everybody has that kind of stuff. Just go and see and touch and feel and move on.
No, I understand that. There's a lot of things that, you know, I've done once and that was good. Don't need to do it again, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. Get a hot dog and call it good.
Well, now there's hot dogs involved. That's what...
You know, I still want to go to Arlington. I don't even know if they still where the Rangers play. I don't think it's called Arlington Stadium. I think they moved across the street. They've got a 2-foot or a 3-foot hot dog.
Oh, gee whiz.
I got to see it. I don't think I could consume one. Well, maybe over a 3-hour period of time. You cut it up. I guess oftentimes it's shared. But just to see one.
A 2-foot hot dog.
Yeah,
how do you carry it?
You probably get wheels. When somebody comes to you, either as a buddy or as a banker, and they have some of these unique ideas, how do you quantify them? I mean, if there's no reference points, and it is obviously unique because that's what they're trying to do. How do you determine the viability of something that is non-traditional?
I always approach it backwards. So,
you mean, is there a bun big enough for the hot dog?
That would be one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you wanted to sell 2-foot hot dogs here, the questions I would ask would be this: okay, what can you sell it for? What's it going to cost you? And then let's get how much you're going to make per hot dog. And then what are the fixed costs and so forth? And you get a number. Where I'm trying to steer you towards is, how many hot dogs do you need to sell to break even?
Cost of good, ROI, and then how many units.
And you also have to look at it. What's your inventory? What do you have to maintain the inventory for that number of sales? Do you have to carry accounts? And if so, you have to have cash for that, and on and on and on. But it really boils down to, how many of these widgets do you have to sell in order to break even? And if you're selling a service, generally you're selling time. So how many of those can you do? And then once you determine how many you have to sell, you determine whether or not you have to look at the market and say, can it support, you came to me and said, I've got to sell 5,000 hot dogs a day to make money. I'd probably tell you, I don't think there's a market in Eureka for selling a 5,000 2-foot hot dogs every day. Good luck.
Yeah, our meeting is now over.
Yeah, but if you told me I can make it on one hot dog a day, then, this market will obviously support
looks
that.
Looks a lot brighter.
Yeah, because you're here.
Yeah, between you and me and a couple of our buddies, we got that one covered nicely. Yeah, it sounds like somebody's having the idea, but also then going to the next level and trying to put some dollars and cents to it to see if it's viable. Don't most people do that coming in, or is it chase the dream and then have to deal with the details?
Well, you have different temperaments of people, and you have those that are creative and those that are more pragmatic. And so each of those will approach it differently.
Yeah, the logic side versus the emotional side. Yeah, that's always the play, isn't it? KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back Talking Shop this morning with the bank dude from Redwood Capital, Mr. John Dalby. So, John, as people come to you with the ideas, and I would think there are some of them that 10 years ago you go, what? And now they come into play and it makes a ton of sense because changes in society, changes in the culture, changes locally. Conversely, ideas that worked really well a number of years ago may not be working out too well now. A mechanic on logging trucks, independent, worked for decades, hasn't worked that well, or the demand isn't quite the same today as it was yesterday. So how does that influence these decisions? Will you hold on to some of these ideas and try to reconnect with somebody in 4 or 5 years?
So we don't, as a banker, we're in a unique position or an unusual position that I cannot advise you on what to do. And the reason being is called lender liability.
Yeah, you get in the
So
the
if
chain.
I told you yeah. that, you know, Brian, you need to change your business plan and you need to go do this or I won't lend you money, then I'm steering you into doing that. And if you fail, then I'm liable. So,
now, but you can say, you can take it up to that point of the recommendation, though.
So I can say, well, if you want to go do that, that's fine, but I'm not going to help you.
Right. At this point, okay. It's not viable because of these
right.
conditions.
I can say, your plan. I can look at your plan and say no. I can say, have you thought about this, this, and this?
Well, you could say no
but
because.
I can't tell you that I will. Yeah, I can say no because, but I can't say yes, I will if you do X. So
it's not an advisory
correct.
Situation.
That's correct. So, you know, I can look at your business plan and say, you know, I think it'll work or, you know, or I don't think it will. But I can't really steer you into, you know, changing, you know, something fundamental.
So if there's something that needs fine tuning, a little bit more detail, can you indicate that? Or do you just blow the whole thing up and say, you can't do it? You may want to revisit the numbers. How far along that guidance can somebody expect their banker to be able to help them out with, or financial advisor, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about so many potential scenarios here that
sure.
there isn't any one answer to it. And so, you know, the guiding principle is I can't tell you how to run your business, but I can tell you if what you know, I can indicate to you that I am comfortable enough to lend you money for it, or I'm not.
Or I
but
almost
if you
am?
Say, but if you brought to me numbers and I look at them, I go, they don't make sense because, you know, your cost of goods, you know, is out of line, or you haven't considered this, or you haven't considered that. You know, I can give you that information.
So areas to work on then.
Yeah. So I'm not going to tell you, you know, Brian, you need to go, start a radio station. In Willow Creek because I think that's a great market.
Yeah, that's totally out of the...
Nothing wrong with Willow Creek.
The area of knowledge.
Right. But
yeah, that's something that's different.
But that's not a market that probably makes a lot of sense.
Now, will you say if you bring the numbers in, or can you, if you bring the numbers in, your cost of goods sold, if you dropped it by 5%, then the numbers are there.
Can you drop it by 5%?
Is that an area that you can wade into?
So I would show you that your cost of goods sold is out of line if you want to, because we'll compare it to industry averages.
Right.
But now if you're on cutting edge and you're into a new market, a new idea, new products, new services that haven't been tested and don't have standardized numbers out there, you know,
it's probably more venture capitalism.
You got to think it through. And so a lot of times, now one thing you're going to find is with lenders is that if the source of repayment is coming from projected income, meaning it's unproven, it's not historic, we're going into a new market, we're doing this, and it's new to my business.
Expanding into Willow Creek.
Right.
You
know. Then we're probably going to use an SBA guarantee, and that's what those funds are for, is for, you know, loans that are based on projected, not historic income.
And that's something most
banks
are able to do?
Mark. So everybody can do SBA loans, but what you want is somebody that is a certified lender, because then they can approve it themselves. They don't have to go.
Oh, so it's an in-house.
You don't have to send it to the SBA and wait for the bureaucracy to approve it. Once you're certified with them, then they'll accept your approval.
What about those areas that have got volatility? I mean, there's regular business volatility, right? But I'm thinking, let's say you are in a niche where fuel prices have a significant impact. Okay, we all know that it's gone up. Now, if you're projecting that over the next 3 or 4 years, prices are going to go down, and that's where our margin is. So over a five-year window, we're okay. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but maybe next week.
Yeah. So the question you ask a trucking company or somebody who's running heavy equipment, you know, and using a lot of fuel, you know, can you charge your client a fuel surcharge?
And know how to spell it properly.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. John, one of the things I think that is intriguing for new business startups or a business purchase is to understand why your customer is your customer. You got price, you got selection, you got quality. You got this, you got that, a bunch of different things that enter into it. But that desire in the buying experience, is that something that factors into the budget? I mean, I would think that's part of the research that you're looking to see if somebody has done. People are going to buy a product because XYZ is the experience. And nationally, I've done some research and it shows that 23.5% of the marketplace wants that experience when buying products from my type of business. Is that too esoteric or too detailed, or is that something that is a positive from your perspective?
A lot of that specific information isn't available to, you know, the average entrepreneur starting a business.
Even with SBDC and REDEC and
yeah, it was just the because of the. You know, what you're looking at is an unusual market. Humboldt County is a little different than most markets. Most entrepreneurs are doing something that's different. So what you're really talking about is what is your selling proposition? What is the value proposition? That would be the other term that's
right,
often used.
Right.
And so if you're, you know, we were talking about groceries during the break. And so if you're selling groceries – for the most part, groceries are groceries.
Yeah, it's a commodity.
Exactly. And so are you selling convenience? Are you selling variety? Are you selling, you know, buying experience?
Yeah, what is your value added?
Exactly. Yeah. And so what do you bring? So, for instance, you know, the idea of a supermarket – which, you know, to us is just a grocery store, but it used to be called a supermarket because they had more stuff. It was really big. They had a variety of things. So if you wanted bread, you got more than one choice. If you wanted butter, you got more than one choice. And so, you know, that variety and the availability of those things was something that was new to the supermarket that wasn't in the local grocery store, the little corner market.
The convenience store, what is now defined as.
Right. And so, and, you know, the C stores and convenience stores, well, that's a whole different ball game because now you're talking about pushing the margins up so they're more expensive, but what you're selling is the convenience. While I'm getting gas, I can go in and, you know, pick up some chips or, you know, whatever they sell in there, or chicken or a burrito.
Yeah. What is the worst? A gas station sushi?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not touching that one, literally. So, you know, you have to look at what you're selling, what's your proposition. So what do you value add? So, for instance, if I was going to go up against, let's say a Starbucks, you know, selling coffee, just because my coffee is the same as that at Starbucks doesn't mean people are going to come down and buy it from me unless I provide the experience. You have, the local coffee, like a Jitter Bean or something like that, you know, where you get great service when you pull up. So everybody's offering something. And
so you're looking for that in the business plan, the delineation of what is their unique selling proposition to step them apart.
That's correct. So if the market for whatever you're selling, we'll go to widgets because economists love the term.
I know it.
Or they used to when I was young.
Yeah. I wonder if there is somebody who makes something that's called widget.
Well, there you
just
go.
Just because.
Yeah. It would sell well to old people like me.
See if there's a product or a service called a widget. Just WIDGET.
Widget, yeah.
Yeah, I've wanted to do that for years.
For those that don't know.
You take an econ class in college, everybody's selling widgets and they're on an island.
Yeah. Now I forgot where we were going with this.
Well, the value added.
Yes, the value added. So you're selling widgets. You got to have some sort of selling proposition, and you know how many widgets are being sold in the market now. If you're going to get a certain percentage of that market, and that's another thing to look at is if you know so many of these are being sold in your market, either you're going to create more market because you're making it more desirable so more people would purchase it.
And that's really
tough. Or you're
tough.
Taking market share away from somebody else, which means you have to have a value proposition greater than theirs.
Yeah, I would see it, not that I know that much, but I would see a huge red flag if somebody thought that they were going to expand the market. Because unless it's really price sensitive, really price sensitive, if you don't like skiing, you could be giving away skis for free, and there's a segment of the community that is just not interested in skiing. Period. End of story. Is that enter into the decision making process the market elastic or not?
So that comes back to the question of how many skis do you have to sell, and then you look at. Is there a market for it where I'm at? So in Eureka, probably selling skis isn't going to be as lucrative as it might be in
Bend,
Oregon, exactly. There's various cities that Redding has Mount Shasta, and, you know, different things like that.
I understand that Medford has Ashland, or Ashland has Ashland.
Yes, Ashland has Ashland.
Pretty cool, huh?
So apparently there are widgets.
A small gadget or mechanical device. okay. Or a computer, the computer widget reference thing.
Okay.
I bet you that's where it came from. Some econ major ended up in computer science and hit big and decided to name it a widget. But nothing... You don't go down and wear a widget after going to the retail store.
No.
Okay. Now I would think that this is a real interesting part of what your industry does, is looking, you know, working with people with their ideas.
It's actually one of the more fun things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And help them chase their dreams or mm-hmm. work with them. But you can't make the recommendation. That's
what I like about what I do, is watching people's dreams come true.
Yeah, or saying no, that's got to be kind of rough.
Yeah, it's never pleasant.
Yeah, okay. Well, We'll just keep it on the positive side when we come back. It's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. John, if someone is trying to move into a mature market, you were talking about grocery stores, you know, the supermarket stores and the convenience stores, and you said, I don't know, you mentioned bread. I wrote down Wonder Bread. You know, that was the bread, right, when we were growing up,
mm-hmm.
and that was about it, and then somebody came out with this thing called wheat. Roman meal. Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, unless you had Fleur's Bakery, the local bakery at the time.
Mm-hmm.
To suggest that somebody could come in with artisan bread at that time. You're going to put water in cans and you think you're going to sell this stuff? Or bottles, right? I mean, the marketplace changes from underneath, and what may have been an absolute giggle in the past could be a home run right now. How do you factor in that timing? I mean, if you don't have the research and you're trying to do something that's unique, that doesn't have a lot of national market information available because it is that unique, how much is faith, how much is trust, how much is belief, and how much is okay, you're going to go for venture capital on this one?
So you've got some different examples here that have different answers to them.
Well, let's stick with water.
Okay, well, water was a very unique one because it was an industry that didn't exist. You know, the idea of buying bottled water seemed, I mean, I remember when it first came out, I thought,
goofy?
Are you crazy? There was a drinking fountain right there. Why would I pay for it? And now, you know, they have entrenched it to the point where people are scared of the drinking fountain. And in fact, if it's not a bottled water, they're not sure if they can drink it, although who knows what's in there. So with that said, that was a very unique expansion or creation of a new industry. We've also seen new industries in technology. It happens all the time. You know, I can remember, this is how old I am, you know, my first banking job, you know, downtown at B of A, we got the first PC in Humboldt County. And so for the entire region, we had
one. Is that
because
you were across the street from Radio Shack?
So, no.
It wasn't a Tandy?
I remember the first PC. And it was in our, I was in the main branch, so it was in our building. And so at night, I could go up and actually use it. And so, you know, I went on there and, you know, I learned stuff. And now it's an industry in which, you know, most people have at least one computer, if not multiple computers. You know, I have one at home and I have one in my office.
You got one on the counter right in front of you there,
yeah,
too.
And yeah. So that is a new industry. You're talking about cell phones. That was another one that was an expansion. But you also brought up bread. So going from when I was a kid, there was one kind of bread. It was called white bread. And now you probably couldn't buy it if you looked for it.
I don't know if anybody bottom shelf.
Yeah, I have no idea if anybody actually makes it anymore.
I did see a Wonder Bread wrap.
Yeah.
I thought, you know,
with the little balloons on it.
Oh, yeah.
Right, with the little balloons, yeah.
It was, yeah.
And but when to move away from white bread to wheat and other types of more wholesome breads, yeah, which is what they were selling was health, was a substantial change, but it wasn't an expansion of a market. It was shifting a market. And so as sales for wheat and different breads expanded, the white bread market deteriorated. To the point where we've seen a lot of those bakeries just go away. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon. It was Williams Bakery.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, I remember driving by that as a kid, and you could smell it. It was
that
fantastic.
Was like what Fleur's, Rob and Sherry have the co-op.
Yep,
where that was. I mean, you could smell. You knew when the bread was being baked because you could smell it all over town.
And so, but you don't have that anymore,
yeah.
know, because those markets have shrunk. And so they had to go into specialty breads, and you know, some adapted and some did not.
I suppose that's part of this equation also, is the adaptability or the recognition to adjust as things develop. Is that part of that initial plan, to build in flexibility, or do you chase the cheese that's right? How's that for an old book? Chase the cheese as it is now, and then when...
Depends on the
conditions change.
Depends on the industry.
Be able to.
Depends on the industry.
Well, that's foresight.
Yeah.
Spencer Johnson.
Yeah. And we've seen a movement away from independent businesses to, you know, national chains. And how many of those have we seen disappear? You know, the local auto parts store, the local retailer.
Well, a lot of the chains are disappearing too.
Yeah.
I'm still a fan, or was a fan, of Bed Bath, and having to chase it through a couple of other folks, which is cool, working with locals. But, you know, depending on why you're there, is it convenience or is it the experience? Experience. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow. This presentation of Talk Shop was recorded at a previous time for playback today.